I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
I guess he showed him that two boy had a problem there with that big old horse head in his bed. Hey, White Aryan Resistance here. White Aryan Resistance here in north central Indiana. And it's a beautiful day here again. Very beautiful. Sunshine and everything. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send all your moolah. Get your wheelbarrow there and go down to the post office and send it to us. Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, it's the 29th of April, almost the last day of April here. So if you're going to do it and got a burning in your heart to do it now because you're not don't have much more chance. You'll never get this chance in April 29th again. Right. Also, go up to resist.com and get educated. Educated. Yeah, we all need educated. There's something up there that you need, and you probably haven't read it. And then when you're most in need of it, you won't have it. And don't blame me. Okay, on with the show.
Okay. That's fine. That's all right. Okay, we're ready. Here we go, Darkus. Standing by, Harold. 5, 4, 3, 2.
The film you have just seen illustrates the simple fact that race is almost always high on the agenda of American social and political life. And if not so, simmering always beneath the surface. Joining me in the studio here in Los Angeles to discuss the issues which arise out of the film are Professor Robert Hill from the University of California, Los Angeles, editor-in-chief of the Marcus Garvey Papers. And there is Osiris Akabala from the movement Pan-African Independent Nation. He describes himself as a black separatist. And Tom Metzger, whom you've seen in the film, who leads the movement. What is it?
White Aryan Resistance.
And Tom Metzger, who you have seen in the film, who leads the movement White Aryan Resistance. And that, of course, speaks for itself.
Yes.
Let me begin with you, Tom, and tell me if this description of you is accurate. You are an unrepentant fascist. And I don't mean that in emotional terms. You seek to destroy what you describe as capitalist democracy in America and replace that by a fascist state along the lines of Germany, Hitler's Germany. And finally, your strategy, it seems, from the things you've said, is where there's harmony between the races to destroy it, where there is suspicion to intensify it, and where there is hatred to exploit it. Is that an accurate?
Well, number one, we don't use fascism in the sense of an economic idea. If we use fascism, It would be something other than what many people know as fascism. It would be racial. We are pure and simple racial separatists. We believe that the transnational corporations and the economic elite of the world, who are only interested in greed and profits, will use any plan or any approach to maximize profits. We believe that their program for the last at least 50 years has been to use races and cultures as shock troops against each other, whereas they would be much better to be have self-determination and separation. And so,
hold a second. What do you mean use different races as shock troops? We are masters of our own destiny, in a sense. You seem to be saying, or inciting violence against blacks, using whites to be violent. They don't do it, you do it.
What I do is primarily to incite resistance to the system, what I call the Washington criminals. I am a racist, pure and simple. I am for the best interest of the white European race, Aryans, if you will, and that is the entire groupings of white people, even over into Russia, which we now network and communicate with. Whatever causes the division of the races, whether it be hatred or love or compassion, of course, because that is my goal.
Tell me, have you been brought to heel by the American judicial system for inciting violence against blacks or a black?
I have been sued.
Could you describe the circumstances of that case?
Yes, I have been sued civilly, and I lost the case. It's now on appeal to the United States Supreme Court, incidentally, in which my enemies could not charge me with criminal acts because I have not been involved in criminal acts. So they ingeniously devised another plot to perjure and bribe witnesses. To say that I sent agents to Portland, Oregon, who in turn talked to other people, who in turn went to a party, and in turn came out of the party, and three white men got in a fight with three black men, and one black man died who was an Ethiopian.
No, they beat him to pulp with a baseball bat.
And the blacks were trying to beat the whites to a pulp with a with whatever they had. So,
and you were charged for inciting?
I was.
Civil suit?
I was charged a civil suit, and I and my son lost that case.
And it bankrupted you?
Well, they didn't have to go too far. I'm not a wealthy man.
How much money?
Well, they took my house. They took my business. My wife died in the process. We were forced to move.
Accept my condolences.
Thank you. We were forced to move into an apartment. But we continued. We never quit publishing our newspaper. We never quit producing our television show and doing all the things we did before. In fact, we do it even more today than we did before the suit.
That seems obvious. Osiris Akabala, tell me, you saw the film. How does it strike you? What impact did it have on you?
None whatsoever.
No impact?
I have no emotional response towards that.
What's your intellectual response to it?
My intellectual response is that I expect those who have been misled to react in such a illiterate and ignorant way towards black people in this country, and those who do so in other parts of the world. Is not surprising to me, because information about the African man have not been given fairly from those who objective is to continue to oppress and suppress the African man throughout the world.
Is it something that black Americans are accustomed to, that kind of vulgar abuse, that insinuations of being like monkeys and explicit statements of the kind? Are you used to that?
Well, it's nothing new, but when you the African man have come into the knowledge of himself and who he is, and have done his own research on the true history of mankind in the world, then nobody can issue insulting remarks towards him that would have any kind of emotional effect, because he knows the truth about himself.
Do these young men who spoke in the film, do they kill? I want that to be on the table. Do they kill people, shoot people? shoot blacks?
Are you asking me?
No.
Well, from what they were implying is that if the situation would present itself, they would have no problem in doing so. I couldn't say factually that they have.
Actually, what we have is a very small section of the white separatist movement happens to be young skinheads of mainly working class backgrounds. The crime rate among these skinheads is so infinitesimal in compared to the crime rate of other races in this country as almost to be a non-entity, except that the press build it way out of proportion.
Let me go to Professor Hill. Professor Hill, I would have thought that the civil rights movement wiped out that kind of racism in the South of America particularly. How do you assess the strength of Tom Metzger's movement?
I think that the lurch towards a revival of extreme racial white nationalism in America is part of the backlash. America has never forgiven the black man and woman and child for confronting American apartheid. The rise of the Republican right in America is part of that backlash. Sooner or later, black people in America would have to contend with the deep denial of white Americans in the face of what was clearly a system that was rotten and had to be dismantled, American apartheid. And this is the backlash.
But what is the strength of a movement like that on the landscape of America right now? Do you think it's huge, threatening the power structure, threatening the lives of millions of blacks?
I don't think so. I think that individual white members of this Aryan resistance will, from time to time, engage in terrorism, terrorist acts, simply because they're powerless. They are powerless in the face of their own state. They are powerless in the face of the transnational corporations. They are powerless in the face of a new consensus that is very deep-rooted, that the denial of rights to any group of people on the basis of race or gender is unacceptable in any democratic society. In the face of this marginality, they may and have resorted to acts of terrorism against individual blacks, Jews, and other minorities.
Osiris, let me ask you this. Your movement states that you want to go back to Africa, ex-slaves, and to set up an independent nation. Is that not a defeatist solution to the problems which Tom Metzger poses?
No, it's the natural solution to the problem that now that blacks are facing in this country. If we are going to be real about the harmony and the close proximity of relationships between the races, then we're going to have to deal with the reality of racial separation. And what we, our organization, is espousing is that the descendants of African slaves who are not immigrants to this country, and not only here in America, but throughout the diaspora, always
Brazilians,
have...
Caribbeans,
yes,
black
yes,
Britishers.
Yes, always have been disrespected to the extent that they were never approached, even after the so-called Proclamation Emancipation was signed, to get their opinion and feeling as to whether or not they want to remain here in America or return back to their ancestors' homeland.
And but there was a tremendous Garvey movement to go back to Africa in that field. Whatever else you may say about it.
Well, I don't think it failed. It would interrupt it for a moment. We are clear evidence that it did not fail. We are the extension of the Garvey movement. and we are continuing the ideals and the philosophy of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And we do not compromise or apologize for that.
But are you proposing to displace people in Africa now from some area in Africa and set up an independent nation?
The descendants of African slaves cannot and will not displace anybody. We have just as much right to any inch of soil on the continent of Africa than any of those brothers and sisters there, and they have no objections to us coming back. And we are saying that the descendants of African slaves here should have a right to make a decision. If you want to take a plebiscite vote to determine who it is who would want to go back, all well and good with us. We know that the American system has succeeded in indoctrinating and brainwashing black folks in this country, many, many portion of us, to the extent that they have no desire to even mention the name of Africa. But there are many of us in this country who will have no problem and returning back to Africa if they understood that what we are advocating is not to return back to resettle over the land empty-handed. We are saying that this country and the European nations, as well as the Arab nation who participated in the destruction of African civilization, is indebted to the African nation, the African man.
Do you support his demands?
Well, let me make one point. That Marcus Garvey was very carefully set up by the white power structure and the Jews in this country and was destroyed. Another thing is, a few years ago at the forum in Los Angeles, California, Inglewood, I was the personal guest of Minister Louis Farrakhan at one of his major speeches. There were 20,000 black people at this meeting.
You and Farrakhan are friends?
We know each other. We have exchanged information and so forth. We have not met personally, but we have had contact since the mid-70s.
Relations.
Oh, yes, we've had relations since the mid-70s.
I thought Farrakhan says the white man is the devil.
I don't care what Mr. Farrakhan feels about the white man, and he doesn't really care what I say about the black man. What he is interested in is in his program, and I'm interested in my program, and that can make us very much allies against the central system. But in this meeting, he asked two questions at this meeting. He asked how many people in this audience would go and work for a separatist state or states in the United States. 20,000 black people were on their feet cheering in that audience. He asked a second question, which even amazed me. He said, how many people, African-Americans in this audience, would go for repatriation to Africa? Well over two-thirds of that audience of 20,000 were on their feet clapping. He was very surprised, even himself. He said so.
So yes, but there are millions of black Americans, aren't there?
There are millions of black Americans. Well, when you get that number, the percentage of that 20,000, I think you would find anyone who takes polls would find that very indicative of a deep-seated desire to separate, that the black race in the United States and North America knows it's never going to get full power in this country, that the same people, white poor and white working people, battle, will keep them down. They will shove the Mexican people ahead of them, and they'll shove the Asian people ahead of them. So black people will still be pushed to the bottom of the rung in the United States, except for a few who are bought off, and they give them some pretty good positions.
Dr. Hill?
I have problems with these two positions. Mr. Metzger, you say in the film over and over, and your supporters say, that you are defending the rights of white nations, of white races. You seem to believe that you're white.
I seem to believe that I am an Aryan man, yes.
That seems to me to be quite fallacious. Well, this is an assumption based on what? You're not white.
I am white in the sense it's commonly known as white. And this
you believe
man,
you're white.
Well, you understand. You would say this is a black man, wouldn't you not?
Or yes.
This is a black. Why cannot you have a? Why do you have a problem saying I'm, as a figure of speech, a white man? I would say Aryan, but you can. Many people say white.
See, when you say Aryan,
if I'm not white, why do we? If we're not white, why do we have all these special laws and affirmative action?
You say you believe that you're white. You're a hybrid like everybody else in America.
European. Hybrid European.
You're a hybrid white. American.
White.
You're a hybrid American, and it's because you are aware of your hybridity that you hate, that you project this hatred, this intense projection of hatred onto others.
Would you define a hybrid American?
What you're dealing with here is self-hate.
What do you mean a hybrid?
A hybrid means that you cannot show by any historical evidence purity of racial stock tracing back to Europe. You can't.
Oh, yes, I can. My library has my genealogy back for 1,000 years.
Well, I'm saying that...
And no, I could have brought them if you'd like to see them.
I'm saying that this fallacy that you, and I looked at very closely at the phenotypes of your supporters in that film, those aren't white people.
I thought you were a sociologist.
No.
Are you an anthropologist now?
No, I'm a historian, and I'm questioning.
And more than that, he's being his point of view.
How does that make you an expert in anthropology and race?
I'm saying that that is a fallacy. The fallacy is of race. Here in the American environment, there is no such thing as pure race.
Well,
that's
okay.
A fallacy.
All right, even if I gave you no pure race.
Yes.
There
are hybrid.
There are recognizable races.
No.
Of people.
No.
And nationalities have nothing to do with it.
No, no, no.
A white person is white, Pan-Aryan, no matter where he's
at. I'm saying you and your supporters are not white, and to believe that you're white is a fiction.
Well, what would you call us?
I would call you Americans, and you're all hybrid
American,
like the rest of
that's
us.
That's a piece of property.
No, no.
That's a piece
that
of property.
That just means that millions of people have settled here, commingled.
That's not a race.
Intermarried.
Europeans, yes. White Europeans have co-mingled. That's
no.
The melting pot.
No,
well, much,
no.
Much more than that. And more than that, you make these assertions, which I can't really handle, you know, that black Americans or white Americans are so different. You speak the same language, you play the same sport, you shop in the same supermarkets, you look at the same programs on television. What is essentially different between you and Osiris?
Well,
except the fact that you work up some fascist ideology to seek power and to project yourself nationally with a lot of hot air, really.
I would say that's not true. We don't watch all the same type of TV programs.
Don't
we
you?
Don't go to all the same ball game. If you're talking about the masses of white American sheep, then you're probably correct.
But don't white people and black people live in harmony in America?
Harmony? As much
they play basketball together?
They are forced to. They're forced to.
On the Lakers, I was looking at the Lakers this morning. Those whites there playing with the blacks.
Yes.
What, they're forced to do that?
They're economically making lots of money. And most black separatists condemn the fact that blacks will go out and act as clowns to make the white masses happy. There are, of course, drugged white masses in this country. All they care about is big football games, big basketball, and so forth. That has nothing
they
to do...
They work in factories together, don't they?
Yes, they do, because...
Serving the army together?
A man has to feed his family.
Serving the army together?
A man will have to do many things and suppress many things to feed his family.
Why are you insisting on destroying this corporation?
They are fools to go into anybody's army, because all the wars are economic, and all the imperialistic things that are going on are economic, and black people to be in a war that a white upper class has started is foolish.
That's not
and
ramble.
It's also foolish for
that's
white
not ramble. Do you accept what one of your supporters said? Whites built America, but that is palpably untrue, isn't it?
No, it isn't.
What were slaves doing then?
Well, we had all kinds of machines, and we've had mules, and we've had all kinds of things like that to do work. And black people did contribute, and they should be compensated for what they contributed. But we would like to say that if we had been in power at the time that slaves were being brought over here, we would have sunk the ships before they got here. We are not economic determinists. We are racial determinists. We are just as opposed to the economic elite who brought the slaves here along with their Jewish buddies as this man here is, Mr. Osiris.
But the clock cannot be turned back on that historical event.
We have to go
the
forward.
The fact is, Africans came here and built this country. And if
they
blacks,
did not build this country.
If blacks were not here in America,
they helped.
America
they
would be New Zealand, America would be Australia, and America would be Canada. The
what's,
only thing
what's
that
wrong
distinguished,
with that?
Because they're not the world's leading economy. The
so
America,
what?
America is the world's leading economy.
I wish we weren't,
because
and we
of
had
the capital
in the streets.
Accumulation.
We would be much better off.
Whatever you wish, fine.
This is not the economic leader
already
of the world. The United States is going down, down, down. And a few elitists in this country, mostly who are white, are getting all the money.
The fact is, you have failed to get that money. And what I see being expressed in this film is failure. which is something that whites are unaccustomed to. And your followers are very upset and frustrated by their failure. What I see in this film is a bunch of failures.
You do?
Yes.
But
well, let me tell you something.
Before you respond, I would want to add this so you can take both together. You put the most... You heap the greatest abuse upon whites. That's what struck me about that film.
We are in a
your
white
followers,
war.
Your followers call whites pieces of shit. You any white person who doesn't accept this litany of abuse that you heap upon blacks, you abuse them yourselves. Soon you're going to abuse each other.
Whites that will not stand up for their race, we're not interested in it. We are in a white civil war. Our greatest enemy is not blacks, not Mexicans or any of these other people. Our greatest enemy, just like in Britain, is the white elite that are in their government. We call them the white criminals. And those are our
white,
main enemies.
What about white workers who say no to you? What about white professionals who say no to you? How would you describe them?
Well, if they want to go with the race-mixing program and the destruction of their race, then they are as much an enemy as anybody else. A black man who will sit and negotiate about the cooperation of indemnification, repatriation, separation, is more of an ally of mine than a white who believes that his future is wound up mixing with other races.
But permit me to say, some of your followers in that film couldn't pass Hitler's racial test, you know.
Well, I don't know. I didn't put them all up and check that out.
So who are you gathering around you?
How do you know what Hitler's test would be?
Oh,
you
he was Aryan, he blonde, blue-eyed. He was into genetically engineering a certain caste.
The majority of people in Germany are not blonde.
You had one or two there who looked quite like gypsies to me.
Gypsies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they must have been pretty good gypsies. They were saying the right thing.
You were taking on flotsam and jetsam.
You know, one thing that impresses me, now you would make a good leader of a good black country in Africa. What are you doing in Britain?
I live there.
Where did you come
comfortably
from?
Comfortably.
Where did you...
With
well,
50
sure.
million whites. And I am interrogating you. This is my program, not yours. Let me go to you, Osiris. Let me go to you. You seem rather quiet. Tom Metzger says that he has relations with Farrakhan. And Farrakhan is a black separatist, as you are. Do you have relations with him?
Farrakhan?
No, with Tom Metzger. Oh,
I'm becoming acquainted with Tom. Yes.
Are you proposing to have the same kind of communication and exchange of information?
Sure.
Don't you believe that is almost sacrilegious? A man
none
who
whatsoever.
Speaks like that about blacks, a man who incites people to kill blacks.
I told you what is
why
said.
Why do you have anything
what
to
is,
do
what
with
is
it?
Said by people who are the victim of the system regarding black people, you know, affects me none whatsoever. You know, I have a job to do, and that is to educate the descendants of African slaves and the African man and woman throughout the world about the importance of returning back to their ancestors' homeland for the purpose of reuniting the African nation. Now, for some reason or another, most of all of the shows that I go on, that passes over the host's head. And I'm saying that I'm going to continue to elaborate that until it seeps into your mind and to your head, that bickering about the emotional turmoil that is going on by those who are the victim of this racist system, all right, have no meaning to me.
It's not emotional turmoil. Some skinheads,
that's all I saw there on the show,
killed an Ethiopian. That is a fact. What's emotional about that? It's a fact. It could have been you.
Sure, it could have.
Oh, okay.
But the underlying factor is who it is that's sowing the root that causes one to act in such a way.
Let me ask you to educate us. Let me ask you
on the stand, the skinheads testified they hadn't even read my newspaper.
Oh.
The point is that in 1920, when Marcus Garvey was at the height of his career,
be careful, he's the authority.
It was the Ku Klux Klan that traveled to New York and met, the leaders of the Klan met with Marcus Garvey, and Marcus Garvey's representatives traveled to Georgia and met with the Klan. And what were they meeting to do? To head off the rash of lynchings and violence that were taking place in the South. They negotiated. Do you think black people are safer in the United States by not negotiating or negotiating?
Okay, let's talk about their safety. On that film, you said that there were much more black people in the world than white people. Black people breed more than white people, and somehow you have to restore the balance. Now, there are only two ways in which you could restore that balance. You got to breed like rabbits, or you got to reduce the numbers of blacks. How are you, which one?
By recognizing black determination and allowing black countries and nations to stand or fall on their own merits.
How are you going to reduce the population of blacks? Tell me.
Blacks will reduce the populations of blacks when they find that they just they overrun their resources in the environment just like whites do. And they will have to understand that they have to bring their population under control.
You're not about bombing them.
I respect black people who have the intelligence to do that.
You're not about bombing them, are you?
No, that's the criminals in Washington that bomb black people. I don't.
Well, it's not going to take bombing. Through the advocation of assimilation upon which this system now socially stands, we'll cause that to come about if someone don't stand up and oppose it.
Tell me, what do you say to some white woman who's married to a black man and got some beautiful children? What do you say to them?
I am so upset by it that I don't even talk to them unless they ask my opinion, and I tell them that you two have both just put the whole genetic history of your family, and that's all you'll ever have, and put it off track. And you're thumbing your nose at every ancestor that went before you.
What's wrong with those children?
Those children are raceless. They're hybrids like you.
And you. And what happens to those children?
Those children become...
defective?
Very unpopular in society.
So then it would be okay to eliminate them as human defects?
We're talking about separation, not
elimination.
Answer
the question. Answer the question.
I think you're talking about genocide.
That's up to the black race, what they want to do with
what
them.
People do, people
in
do.
In a white state, we would not
who
have...
Are you, who are you to tell anyone that they must not make love or that they must not come together?
Well,
who are you to tell them that?
That happens all over the world. The Chinese, the government just told a billion Chinese they couldn't have children, didn't they?
So why don't you go to China?
Well, I just came back from Japan, and I got along very well in Japan. Japan has homogenous nation. They're all, basically all Japanese. They work together to a common cause of a great nation. They're clean, they're polite, they're law-abiding, and they have a city of 9 million people, and they only have 16,000 cops in Tokyo.
Well, let me ask you.
I admire that.
How come you didn't have your skinheads on the program hear that? Because they were denouncing the Asians. Here in America.
I think in general...
They were calling them pieces of shit.
I think they do, especially the Southeast Asians, the Chinese, and so forth. But they know the difference between the Japanese and the rest of Asia.
No, no, you were in Asia. You've just come back
from
Japan. What are you
doing
there?
Japan is basically a Western nation.
But what are you doing there? You're saying that the people, the Japanese Americans, the Japanese who are in this country... are pieces of shit.
No, they didn't say that at all.
They said Asians.
And
yes.
Well, even if they did, that was their particular opinion. You seem to think that all these people have given a blood oath to Tom Metzger. They don't. They all have their different opinions.
You are their leader.
Now, I could... Well,
please take some responsibility.
I could take you to many, many meetings where you'd meet college professors and all kinds of academics and so forth that would say it in their opinions. I don't force people to say what I want them to say.
You know, Mr. Metzger,
I allow freedom of speech.
As a historian and as a human being, I'm going to say something to you.
Spit it out.
You're very, very fortunate to know African-American people, no Asians, and people who have extended hospitality to you, talk to you. Really, you come across as a member of some fallacy called race, some racial white fallacy, and you're really marginal now, and you're looking for allies. You're looking for allies among Asians, you're looking for allies among blacks. Because that's not your philosophy. Your philosophy says whites are supreme.
No, my philosophy...
Your philosophy preaches white supremacy.
My philosophy is survival of the fittest.
Oh, let's come to that. There's something I want to ask you about that. You said something I find most remarkable. In all my years, nobody has ever said something like that. You place us on the same level with animals.
I place myself on the same level with animals. We are animals. We're all animals.
What kind of white supremacy is that?
I say we're the king of the carnivores, though. I believe that the white race, the Cro-Magnon people, fought their way to the top, the killer-hunter instinct, and that's why the white race has been on top. I make no apology for it.
After all the development of civilization by human beings,
I'm talking about
scientific
development
in thought, you reduce us to animal behavior.
We're all animals.
Are we?
Yes.
Speak for yourself.
What are you?
Human being.
What do you mean?
What is a human being?
What do you mean a human being?
There is a strict difference between myself
what is a human
and a
being?
Dog. Okay, my friend.
Well, obviously there are separations between animals, but some animals, you know, like Orwell said, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. In the struggle for survival and survival of the fittest, obviously the race is hunter-gatherers and killers. I mean,
what is very pitiable here is that you speak as a individual who is in trouble. You think your race is in trouble.
Of course it's in trouble.
But, you know, this is quite a ways from where white supremacy was at the end of the 19th century or the 18th century. You've come a long way. You've fallen
pretty
low. Well,
because at one time it was more based on race, and then it got into economic determinism, and it was simply money. And so the great British Empire, instead of sticking to race, used mercantilism got into greed and money, and the leaders of the white nations are all a bunch of greedy bastard, warmonger, imperialists.
Well, okay, that is simplistic nonsense.
Let me put it in a nutshell for you. You're preaching the restoration of white power because you're saying
a restoration of white dignity and self-determination.
Okay, but you acknowledge
that. But not for just the rich, for the poor, too.
You acknowledge that it has slipped from what it once was.
It was bastardized into economic.
And it's time to restore it.
Yes, to culture and race.
But you have been losing consistently, you see.
No, we haven't been losing.
You held blacks.
No, we have been betrayed.
Answer this.
The blacks have
blacks,
not gained anything through the civil rights movement.
You held blacks in trouble.
It was the white economic powers that decided to use it, take it, and abuse it.
But you lost your domination of the South.
How do you think Martin Luther King was murdered? Because when he was playing the game that was fitting in with the program, he was okay. The minute Martin Luther King got into international politics and the Vietnam War, bap, they knocked him off. Don't you see that?
But talking about murder, what do you feel about the conviction this week of one of your co-religionists, this gentleman, Mr. Beckwith? Della Beckwith?
I think it's a very sad state of affairs that a man can be tried three times and then go up and be tried the fourth time, and finally, so-called evidence from 30 to 40 years ago, convict an 80-year-old man to life in prison. It's obscene. You couldn't get away with that with anyone else from any other belief in this country.
But
when he killed Medgar Evers...
I don't believe he did.
Were you applauding when Medgar Evers was assassinated?
That was so far back, I wasn't even racially sensitive at that time.
What were you doing then? That's important.
Well, I recall, I was working on the missile program at Douglas Aircraft in Santa Monica, working on the second stage of the moonshot.
So you are converted into...
Yes.
Who converted you? Tell us your story.
Primarily observation. It began very early when I left a homogenous community of all white people in the Midwest and was thrust into culture shock with other races in the Army. But that
you had friends in the Army, black friends?
Yes, I had black friends in the Army.
You fought?
No, we were not in war. It was in peacetime. And then I evolved through that, not really still thinking too much about race, into California in the 60s and began to explore the economic underpinnings of our problem. And the economic underpinnings of our problem led me to the race issue.
The people don't respond like that. Tell me, you had very good black friends?
Well, if you mean, do I believe in interracial dating and like that?
You had black friends.
Yes, I had black friends.
You are on a hustle now, aren't you?
A hustle?
You don't believe what you see.
Oh, I sure do, and I've paid the price.
You don't believe what
people
you see.
Look. I could. They are.
Do you make money
after the trial in Portland, I was offered a contract by the Southern Poverty Law Center that if I would quit speaking, if I would quit producing TV, I would quit doing all this, I could have my house, I could have my business and everything. It would have been very simple
you make
to
some,
do, to
you,
sign that paper.
I want to suggest
I can send
that
you the
anyone
paper.
Who's had close relations with blacks. Any white person who's had close relations with blacks. You were the first one I know who's turned tail and gone the opposite way.
Okay. Wait a minute. I didn't say that I had close relations.
You said they were your friends.
In the Army, we had men that I served with. I respected them. They were black. We weren't dating each other's women and all this kind of stuff, but I had respect for them. They were good.
You were buddies in the Army.
But I still believe I would be very happy to visit the nation that Osiris wants to build in Africa and be his guest.
May I ask you this?
And I have no problem with Osiris being my guest in my home.
May I ask you this?
But we understand each other.
Is there an economic basis to your organization?
Well, I don't know what it would be. We do
have a
newspaper.
Television station.
Well, the television is simply public access. We're on in 9 states and about 60 cities.
Do you make some money
from
it?
There's no money from that. We do have a newspaper and donations. I mean, I think the average garbage truck driver in San Francisco has a bigger budget than we do.
Where do you get your money from?
Well, people send in donations and they subscribe to the newspaper.
So there is a survival aspect to your enterprise.
Like the Anti-Defamation League, like the NAACP, I don't think they could survive without money. I've never seen any of these groups operate without a very large budget. Is there something that says that a movement should not have finances? You know that's impossible. If we had enough finances, we'd be doing much better.
Hold on, Professor Hill. Let me ask you this. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Yes.
Do you have a hope in hell of undermining and destroying that ideal?
That was not in the Constitution.
Large numbers of Americans.
That was not in the Constitution.
Let me finish the question.
Or in any state constitution.
Which large numbers of Americans subscribe to?
No, they don't.
Do you have a hope in hell?
That's nonsense.
Of undermining it?
This historian over here can tell you that was simply a tactic by Jefferson and the boys to get sympathy from the French, because the French were having equality.
Nevertheless, millions of Americans
from the French. So it's nonsense. Nobody is equal. Nothing is equal. And I would hate to live in any society where people actually were equal.
But you do. You absolutely
are you kidding?
Do.
The poor don't have equality in this country, and the blacks don't have equality
it's
in this country.
It's an ideal to
and
which
the poor white,
tried.
Oh, it's an ideal. It's a myth. It's nonsense. Only promoted by scallywags.
If we weren't all equal, Nixon and Reagan would never have been presidents of the United States.
Oh, you don't? Look, by the time you get to those conventions, the big boys have already decided who's going to be who. We don't have anything to do with
but
that.
Okay, let me put
process.
It another way. You don't have a hope in hell of imposing a fascist authoritarian state in the United States of America.
Oh, okay.
You are marginal
all right.
to everything.
Okay.
There are a handful of you, and it's all hot.
Never going to go anywhere.
No.
Seemed to me they said that about a few fellows in Germany back in the 20s and 30s.
But if you are not promoting equality, which I heard you to just say, what are you promoting?
I'm promoting survival of the fittest. Whatever you can become, you become. If you can build a nation, you build a nation. If you can become this, if you can become that, if you have the genetic ability and the intelligence,
can you be more specific?
Well, how specific do you want me to be?
You say you are
opposed. How did you get your job?
No, you said you're opposed to equality. And I want to know what it is you're
because
promoting.
Because it's a myth. It's a perennial myth.
Uh-huh.
Just like
so what is the reality?
Religion.
What is the reality?
The black slave, what did he do? The first thing he did, unfortunately, was adopt the slave master's religion. And then he wonders why he's still a slave.
But if you are not promoting equality, why are you endorsing the idea of black and white co-equal self-determination?
I didn't say that. Is it separation? The black nations can have whatever kind of state built on any philosophy
of
they want.
That's a form
no,
of
it's self-determination.
Tell me about these black nations.
And it's survival of the fittest.
Tell me about equality.
Well, if they want to traipse after the perennial nonsense of equality in a black nation, they're welcome to do it. No. In the white nation, we don't want it.
But you are.
We want excellence.
Do you accept the notion of equality with whites?
Equality in terms of opportunity, yes. Mm. But in terms of being, there is a difference.
I want to explore.
That's a myth.
I want to explore this African question with you.
Let me
explore it.
Because, you know,
what prevents you from
to interrogate
absolutely.
Tom?
Well, Tom needs interrogating.
Well, then you should have had Tom.
But let me ask you this: what prevents you, as so many Americans have done, from going to Africa without all the fuss and fanfare?
You know, that question should have been put to the slave traders when they invaded the continent.
No, I'm asking you.
Well, you know, what prevents me mm-hmm. is the knowledge of the need of the reunification of the African nation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in this struggle for selfish reasons.
But
many blacks have repatriated to Africa.
They go all the time.
The book, Black and
Liberia, Liberia was popular.
And the results is zero. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that the need for repatriation as a group of descendants of African slaves to go back to our ancestors' homeland for the purpose eventually of reuniting the African nation is a reality. It's a must. And this is something that will happen irregardless of what the left and the so-called Negroes in this country might think.
Mr. Metzger, in your espousal of white racial supremacy, what I see is a lot of acting out by young adolescents with fantasies of grandiosity. You are a leader, and I think you have a responsibility for encouraging these grandiose fantasies, this fascination with guns, this going into the bush, this enrapturement with fire. What is this?
Would you rather have them in uniform in Somaliland killing black people?
No, that is an international agreed upon.
Oh, I see. That's respectable killing.
That's not sent there to kill. That's sent there to preserve life.
Oh, I see. And for the oil companies, you mean?
There is no oil in
Somalia. Oh, there's no oil in Somalia.
No, there is no oil in Somalia.
Six of the biggest oil companies in the United States have already got their lands set to drill.
Right.
In Somaliland.
I don't know.
You don't think the United States goes anywhere except for money.
We're not talking about Somalia. We're talking about
Pakistan
those kids acting
well,
out.
Well, I would rather see them act out their fantasies
Nigeria is
for their race here than be taken into an economic imperialist army and sent around the world to kill people they don't even know.
So it's fantasy nonetheless.
Fantasies
it's
have
fantasy.
a very long history of coming true.
But you see, when fantasies don't come true, they become absurd. And the only way to try to make them come true is through violence.
Violence is a very acceptable means of gaining one's ends in the world.
And you would have to choose
government
violence
uses all the time
to support the fantasy of your whiteness.
The present criminals
because
in
you
Washington,
aren't white.
The present criminals in Washington use it all the time.
And only violence can support the fantasy of your whiteness.
Well, if at the end,
which is a fallacy.
Well, to survive, if you needed to use violence, of course you'd use violence. A black man uses violence to survive, and so does a white man. But you only believe in collective criminal violence by governments, don't you?
No.
You said something. Let me proceed. You said something which rather shocked me. I mean, most of the things you said do about the Indians. You said that they were very fortunate that you didn't wipe out a lot of them.
That's true.
And bury them somewhere.
Actually, it was only the Christians...
Or drive them into the sea.
It was only Christians' schizophrenia that dealt with the Indians. First, they want to kill them, and then they want to save them, and then they want to make them Christians, and a
you
whole
just
bit.
Kill them.
Or have driven them out. Or, as today, I've offered negotiations to Indians and said, look, I have no problem recognizing even more land
This is their place.
They're Mongoloid people. They're not Indians, and that stupid title of Indian is crazy. They are Mongoloid people. They came here from Asia. Now,
you just came from Asia, didn't you?
I came from Japan. Uh-huh. I consider Japan a very Western nation myself. I don't know
Give me the scenario in which you would come to power.
Come to power? I hate that term. But
your slogan is white power.
Not my slogan. No, a lot of the guys use that, but I don't. Because there's too many rotten...
Or when your ideas would come to fruition in the United States.
There's too many rotten whites in power.
Okay.
So, you know, you go down a street screaming white power, and a black guy standing over there says, that's all I see is white power. He's right. It's white degenerate power in Washington and Wall Street.
Tell me the scenario that your ideas will come to fruition in government in the United
First,
States.
First, we have to break up the United States. Anything that's good for the central government of the United States today is bad for us. Anything that's bad and weakens the central government of the United States today is good for us.
How are you going to break it up?
It's breaking up now. It's beginning to break up. California now has three bills before the state Senate to divide California not only in two but into three. Florida has bills to separate into two. We have
like the Soviet Union you're talking about. The difference.
I want to see all the superpowers break up because they're the major problem in the world, and then we can have self-determination and I think live quite peaceably.
Well, you know, Mr. Metzger, if you break up America, could only mean that you want to return to the Bush. But let me tell you, if you return to the Bush, it's even Steven.
It's even Steven. Flip the coin. Nature will be the judge.
And you ain't going to prevail.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Thank you, Professor Hill. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Cyrus Akabala.
Thank you.
And good night.
And your GTO, I've got a new machine, and she really goes. When I pass you on the crack strip, you'll know darn well. Been beaten by a porcupine, V.A. Chevelle. Tacking it up now, you better be quick. Nothing can outrun my SS-396. There's lots of chrome goodies sitting under the hood. She looks real pretty like a tough one should. On a red line tire, she sits real mean. She's the coolest hot one you've ever seen. Cruising the highway, I get my kicks. Everybody's digging my SS-396. Look at her go. Bucket seat. When the four-speed tranny is starting to whine, we'll know that the super sport wants to get off the line. Cruising the highway, I get my kicks. Nothing can match my SS-396. Look at her go. Bucket seat, the four-speed tranny is starting to whine. We'll know that the super sport wants to get off the line. Cruising the highway, I get my kicks. Nothing can match my SS-396.